Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 9th of July 2024. My name's Simon and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers chosen by Margaret Simpson and Bridget Doole, and read by Stephen Harness and Bridget Doole. We shall also hear John Clare's sonnet, introduced and read by Jenny. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
Oxford University has been accused of colonising the city with house building and turning it into a campus. Independent MP candidate for Oxford East, Jabu Nala Hartley, is raising concerns around what she describes as the City Council dancing to the university's agenda. This comes as planned development, including the multi-million pound Oxpens site off Oxpens Road, has been earmarked by the university for student accommodation and private commercial developments. Ms. Nala Hartley said Oxford City Council appears to believe that its job is to facilitate the university's agenda of turning the city into a campus, whilst forcing all the surrounding towns and villages to complete the green belt and become a community belt to serve them. Every housing developer in Oxford has to ensure that 50% of their developments comprise affordable housing, except one, Oxford University, who do not have to meet any quota at all. The richest institution in the city, the one that is the primary cause of its affordability crisis, is the only one exempt from helping to resolve it. It really is one rule for us and another for them. I grew up in apartheid South Africa, where black workers were stripped of their rights and banned from living in the cities they had to serve. But today I see Oxford too being turned into a city from which the working class are barred, and the university colonises more and more of the city, forcing up rents and pushing working class families out of their own town to surrounding towns and villages, from where they have to commute every day, to stripping these areas of a sense of community. Responding to the concern, City Council Cabinet Member for Planning Louise Upton insisted the Council already imposes strong limits on university development. Ms. Upton said, "We do have very robust planning policies. The way we do that is by limiting the number of students who can live out. Those limits we are put on were strongly imposed by the universities, but we stood up for them. They can't buy up random bits of land and build student housing on it. The university clearly historically owns a lot of land. No planning authority can force a private owner to do anything on their land. It's a difficult balance getting employment space in the right place and having enough housing. To suggest the city council is allowing the universities to stamp all over it is daft. Ms. Upton added she thought we do need to recognise the university makes a huge contribution to the city and to the UK. The University of Oxford did not respond to the request for comment.
Oxford City Council has been called utterly shameful for failing to spend millions of pounds worth of affordable housing money after the government issued a strongly worded letter. The authority has earmarked affordable housing as one of its key priorities, but it is being criticised by former City Councillor and Oxford East MP candidate Jabu Nala Hartley for failing to spend money which was provided to it by the government. This comes after the then Minister for State for Housing and Planning, Lucy Fraser, wrote to the heads of the Oxfordshire Growth Board in December 2022, the six councils in the county responsible for administering the Oxfordshire Housing and Growth Deal. A funding pot of £215 million had been provided to help to deliver 100,000 new homes in the county by 2031, with Ms. Fraser saying in her letter that the affordable housing funding, worth £60 million, was not fully utilised. Ms. Nala Hartley said, "At a time when local government is being starved of funds for essential services by the Tory government, it is utterly shameful that a Labour council failed to spend even that money that was made available to them. This was money intended to alleviate the city's biggest social problem, its housing crisis. The council has been justifying the sell-off of valuable community spaces, such as East Oxford Games Hall, on the grounds that it needs the money for housing. But now we know they are failing to spend even the money that has been made available to them for that very purpose. It's a total disgrace." The letter from Ms. Fraser adds, "My predecessors wholeheartedly supported you in the growth deal agenda. However, progress since that point has not been as positive as we had hoped for. Further, I note that the affordable housing funding was not fully utilised and that the housing for infrastructure funding requires a significant time extension to be delivered as envisaged." City Council Cabinet Member for Planning, Louise Upton, suggested the authority had a fully worked up plan to spend all the allocated money, but that COVID had delayed things a bit. Ms. Upton added, "While government clawed back a small proportion of the funding for Oxfordshire as a whole, Oxford was able to make full use of the funds we had available to us, and many local people now have new Oxford council houses as a result." She also suggested Ms. Nala Hartley's criticism was misplaced due to the programme post Ms. Fraser's letter targeting 100% of the original delivery target. Ms. Upton referred to a growth deal document which stated, "A bespoke approach to the final schemes was agreed with the Department for Levelling Up, Housing and Communities in order to maximise the number of homes delivered by the scheme. Through this approach, the programme is aiming to deliver its original target of 1,322 units."
The Oxford Green Beltway goes through your local area and was created by the Oxfordshire branch of CPRE, the Campaign to Protect Rural England, in 2007 to highlight the importance of the Green Belt. On Sunday 21st of July, local running clubs will be tackling the Ox Belt Relay, running the 54-mile route in relay, with 8 runners in each team, each running legs of between 4.5 and 9 miles. More details of the race can be found here, https://hrr.org.uk/oxbelt-relay/. If you're travelling along the route on July 21st, do keep an eye out for us running past in your club colours and cheer us on. The relay is organised by volunteers from the local running clubs. The first event was in 2022 and had 3 teams taking part, and it has grown so this year there will be up to 18 teams from 10 clubs taking on the route through the countryside and villages that surround Oxford. If you'd like to find out more about CPRE looking after the countryside, including volunteering opportunities, please visit www.cpreoxon.org.uk.
New analysis reveals that hundreds of workers are employed in green jobs in Oxford. But the UK is lagging behind other nations for green manufacturing. The Institute for Public Policy Research, IPPR, has found the country has suffered an exceptional decline compared with international peers, losing a third of its manufacturing strength in 30 years. However, it said, UK manufacturers still have a competitive edge in making some of the products vital for a net zero economy, adding that there was potential to be world leading with the right government support. The analysis found, on average, 689 people were employed in manufacturing sectors related to the green transition across the Oxford Travel to Work Zone between 2016 and 2022. Of these, 116 had jobs in manufacturing parts for green transport, 335 were employed in heat pump manufacturing, while 238 were involved in industries like manufacturing parts for wind farms. The IPPR said jobs in the net zero economy tend to be significantly more productive, paying on average £10,000 per year than the national average salary. It highlighted parts of the country that are well equipped to expand their capacity in green industries. Out of 212 travel to work zones, Oxford was ranked 37th in green transport manufacture. The think tank said despite the significant decline, the UK is already world leading in making one in three products vital to the green transition. It is also strong at making electric trains and their parts, heat pump components, and turbines for geothermal or hydroelectricity generation. Dr. George Dibb, head of IPPR's Centre for Economic Justice, said, "The UK faces three generational challenges: to deliver net zero, to level up and revigorate our economy, and to become more resilient to future shocks. These challenges have a common solution: seizing the growth opportunities of green manufacturing." He added, "Over the past 30 years, we have slipped sharply behind our global competitors in the quality and kinds of things we actually make. That's bad for jobs, for living standards, for our security, and for our long-term economic strength as a country." Rain Newton-Smith, CEO of the Confederation of British Industry, said, "Green truly is the economic growth opportunity of the 21st century, with our research showing it could deliver as much as £57 billion to the UK economy. That's something we can't afford to miss out on. And our manufacturing sector is fundamental to help us secure that prize. The race is now on to build our expertise in advanced manufacturing and leverage our established supply chains to make the most of the green opportunities on offer."
Apart from being a fun family activity, swimming has great benefits for body and mind. Outdoor pool swimming is also a sure sign that summer holidays have arrived. If you've never been to Abbey Meadows or Hinksey Pool on a summer's day, you're missing out. Both are great places to bring a picnic blanket and make a day of it, or just pop in for a late swim session. Abbey Meadow Abingdon, the newly renovated heated outdoor pool, will reopen in the summer season on July 20th. The pool offers both lane swimming and swim for all sessions, and is fully accessible facility with ramp access. The Abbey Meadow Splash Pad, always a great spot for younger children, opened in May, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day. There is also a play area open all year round. For more information and timetables, visit www.better.org.uk/leisure-centre/vale-of-white-horse/abbey-meadows-outdoor-pool. Hinksey Outdoor Pool, Oxford. The pool at Hinksey is a 35-metre heated free-form pool with a shallow area for children and a beach area for infants and wheelchair access. Season passes are available to purchase, or you can pay as you go. For details of timetables and memberships, go to www.oxfordcityleisure.com/hinksey-outdoor-pool/. Oxford Brook Swimming Pool. You may already be aware that following an announcement from Oxford Brookes University in May, the swimming pool, sauna and steam room facilities at the Harcourt Hill campus are due to permanently shut in September. For anyone who uses the pool on a regular or occasional basis, or took their children to swimming lessons there, or for the many primary schools who have used the pool for years, this is a huge disappointment for the area. Botley and North Hinksey Parish Council is collecting stories and signatures to make the case to keep it open. Please visit the BNHPC webpage, botleynorthhinksey-pc.gov.uk. An online petition is also circulating to try save the pool. If you're interested in adding your signature to this, visit www.change.org and search Save Our Swimming Pool, Gym and Pitches.
The University of Oxford has helped create the biggest ever survey on climate change, and the results show 80% of people want more government action on the environment. The survey, which was conducted for the UN Development Programme, UNDP, with the University of Oxford and Geopol, looked into the views of more than 73,000 people across 87 languages and 77 countries, which represented 87% of the world population. As the biggest ever standalone public opinion survey, the People's Climate Vote 2024 showed a strong majority wanted their governments to take stronger action to tackle climate. And 86% said they wanted to overcome geopolitical differences to do that. Participants were asked 15 questions on climate change for the survey, designed to help understand how people are experiencing the impacts of climate change and how they want world leaders to respond. Professor Stephen Fisher of Oxford University's Department of Sociology said, "A survey of this size was a huge scientific endeavour. While maintaining rigorous methodology, special efforts were also made to include people from marginalised groups in the poorest parts of the world. This is some of the very highest quality global data on public opinions on climate change available." The report found that some of the biggest greenhouse gas emitters supported stronger climate action, with majorities ranging from 66% of people in the United States and Russia to 67% in Germany, 73% in China, 77% in South Africa and India, 85% in Brazil, 88% in Iran, and up to 93% in Italy. In five big emitters, Australia, Canada, France, Germany, and the United States, women were more in favour of strengthening their country's commitments by 10 to 17 percentage points. Only 7% of people globally said their country should not transition at all. The survey found that climate was a regular thought for many people, with 56% globally thinking about it regularly, with more than half more worried than previous years. More than two-thirds of people globally said their big decisions about where to live or work were being impacted by climate change, particularly in the least developed countries, more than in places like North America, where only 42% said that these life decisions were guided by climate. The Oxford Mail and Oxford Times are now searching for unsung heroes across Europe, across Oxford, who are contributing to make our world a better place through climate initiatives. The Oxford Mail and the Oxford Times join forces to announce the launch of the inaugural Oxford Climate Awards, which will be hosted at Oxford Town Hall on October 17th. They say, "We are proudly supported by Local IQ, the commercial arm of our wider business, and headline sponsor Oxford City Council. These are the following categories: Sustainable Small Business of the Year Award, Sustainable Medium Business of the Year Award, Innovation in Climate Action Award, Sustainable Primary School Year Sustainable Primary School of the Year, Sustainable Secondary School of the Year, Sustainable Further Education School or College of the Year, Biodiversity and Ecology Award, Green Building and Design Award, Climate Community Group Award, Green Transport Award, Youth Climate Action Champion, and Climate Action Champion. Alongside the spotlight on each award, we feature our categories, category sponsors, who we are delighted to have on board and make this amazing event happen. The closing date for nominations is Sunday, August the 11th, and entry forms can be found on www.oxfordmail.co.uk/climate-awards.
An employment law solicitor from Bicester has made the most of his redundancy package by using it to launch an award-winning business. Roy Magara, founder and director of Magara Law, was laid off from his role at a law firm in August 2020 during the pandemic. He used his redundancy payout as the initial investment for his new business, covering startup costs and getting the venture off the ground. He said poor customer service has led many legal professionals to develop a negative reputation. Magara Law was born with the intention of moving away from the legal firm's institutional and cold-hearted stereotype. Instead, the firm follows a customer-centric approach, which puts the client's best interests at the very core. Despite challenges posed by the pandemic, Mr. Magara's business, originally based at Perch Co-working in Elmsbrook, a cooperative enterprise hub offering co-working business support and office space hour, has thrived. The firm doubled its forecasted turnover in the first quarter and went to quadruple its revenue within the first few years. He continued, starting up in the thick of lockdown was a risky move in the eyes of many friends and family, but it was actually a time when excellent customer care was in most need. With redundancies, furloughing and the shift to remote working, employment was in a state of flux and a new business. I was able to be agile when handling individual circumstances and ever-changing policies. The firm now has offices in London, Reading and Banbury, in addition to Elmsbrook, serving more than 1,000 clients since its establishment. Mr. Magara now leads a team of five, with the firm receiving 3 business and law awards and 4 additional nominations. He said, "When I was made redundant, I never imagined that it would be the start of something so profoundly positive. Running my own firm and taking ownership over how I support my clients has been enormously rewarding, and looking back, redundancy gave me the push I needed to find that fulfillment for my career. I am now eagerly looking forward to the future of Magara Law, continuing to give our clients the support we deserve." Lucy Wendon, Community Manager at Perch, added, "The growth of Magara Law over the last few years has been incredible, and it's a testament to the passion, talent and hard work of Roy and his team. Roy's courageous decision to pivot from his situation, follow his ambitions and succeed as an entrepreneur has been inspiring to witness and makes him a perfect fit for the small business community at Perch."
A community midwifery service is making the most of new facilities in Oxford after opening recently. The Florence Park Midwives now have 3 additional clinic rooms, an additional office and waiting space in the Rectory Centre, in addition to their existing facilities on Rymers Lane. The centre hosts a daily maternity support worker clinic, where parents can bring their babies in the days following their birth for a weight and blood spot test. The clinic also offers infant feeding support and jaundice checks. The Florence Park Midwives Administrator is also based at the centre. Since Monday, the 1st of July, the Florence Park midwives have been carrying out initial home visits, with all future appointments in the postnatal clinic at Rectory Road. Wendy Hill, matron for community services at OUH, said, "This is a really important space for our service users in the Cowley area. It will allow us to provide more appointments and more space for quality clinical care, as well as more space for the team to work from. We are really grateful to our colleagues in the Oxford Hospitals charity and their Silver Star Maternity Fund for helping us secure furniture for the space as well." Mylika Redfern, Director of Midwifery at OUH, said, "It is fantastic to witness the dedication and effort demonstrated by the Florence Park midwives in creating a welcoming and inclusive environment for women and their families in Oxford."
A University of Oxford professor who specialises in researching cancer has won the city's 2024 Race for Life. Francis Barr is the head of the biochemistry department at the university, focusing on understanding cell growth and how this can go awry in cancer. The professor took time away from the labs to run in the 2024 edition of the Race for Life in the city centre on Sunday morning, June the 30th. Racing in the 10K run, Francis finished first out of thousands of participants to claim the gold medal after the race began at 9:30 a.m. "It feels great and it helps when it's all for such a great cause," he said. "I was racing for friends and colleagues who unfortunately are no longer with us or have to live with the consequences of cancer, so it's important for me to do this. The race was great and not too hot as if it had been yesterday. I wouldn't be standing here talking to you." A team led by a man whose son has previously undergone successful treatment for bowel cancer raised money for cancer research at the weekend. The newly formed training and recruitment team at Stagecoach West's Oxford Depot took part in the charity Race for Life event in Oxford on Sunday, June the 30th. Both team leader Paul Green and team member David Kemet have had family members affected by cancer. Mr. Kemet's wife, Chris, has received successful treatment for breast cancer. Mr. Green said, "We've all trained incredibly hard for Sunday's Race for Life, and we had an incredible day. We're a relatively new team at work, so it's been a wonderful day and getting to know each other and building great relationships." An Oxfordshire school has issued a safety warning after reports of people jumping into the River Thames. Wallingford School on St George's Road is located close to the river and has released a statement in conjunction with Thames Valley Police and social media. "We've been receiving reports from concerned members of the public that young people have been seen jumping into the river from Wallingford Bridge," read the statement on X. "Although we appreciate this can be fun for children, we'd be actively discourage this type of behaviour for the safety of the individuals involved and others that may already be in the water. Rivers can be extremely unpredictable and dangerous, and jumping into them from height can cause serious injuries or even death." The statement added that the police force and school discourage young people from putting their safety at risk by jumping into the water. "We would strongly encourage all young people to be mindful of their behaviour and think about their safety," continued the statement. "If, as a parent, you are aware your child is enjoying themselves down the river, please do remind them of the risks and to enjoy the warmer weather safely."
New figures show that more children in Oxfordshire got into their first choice school this year. The figures came during an intense debate about the future of school places after the Labour Party's plans to remove the VAT exemption on private schools. In Oxfordshire, 13,906 applications were submitted for schools in primary and secondary schools for the upcoming academic year. Of these, 91% received their first preference, which was a slight rise from last year, when 90% were successful. Across England, 83% of secondary and 93% of primary pupils got into the school they wanted, a minor improvement from last year. Pepe de Lazio, General Secretary of the Association of School and College Leaders, said, "It's great to see that more parents are getting their first place preferences. This is likely to be a national trend we'll see in future years too, as the number of school pupils continues to fall because of a decline in births. State school pupil numbers across England are due to decline by more than 625,000 between 2023 and 2030. It won't be spread evenly, though, because there will continue to be pressure on places in some schools because of local factors." He added, "There is a wider implication for the state sector because falling school rolls equate to less money as funding is allocated on a per pupil basis. This means that many schools will have to make cuts, and that is why we are calling on politicians to commit to increasing the funding rates rather than taking this as a saving for the Treasury."
An Oxfordshire festival has been named as one of the best UK festivals for electric vehicles. Researchers assessed charger availability at each event, focusing on the number of locations within a 50-mile radius and prioritising proximity to rapid charging points. Wilderness Festival in Combury Park, which takes place across the first weekend of August, ranked as the 8th best for zero-emission drivers. Crunching the numbers across the 10 biggest festivals in the UK, it found revellers at the Somerset Bash, which is one of the few major festivals with the charging on-site, comes out on top. The world-famous event benefits from a super hub point nearby, points at Solstice Park, Lee Delamere and Teal's Farm Shop, and 368 EV charging spots in the area. Leeds Festival follows closely, lacking on-site charging but benefiting from high-quality stations at locations like Wetherby, Woolley Edge and Ferrybridge Services, totalling 504 stations. Download Festival ranks third as the Metalheads can access Donington Park services, rapid charging, and it's near the M1, which has 11 more. Rebecca Treble, Chief Customer Experience Officer at the sustainable energy firm GridServe, which compiled the data, said, "Plan ahead so you know where your chargers are along the route, and make sure you are hitting them in plenty of time ahead of any festival traffic. Timing is everything, and getting an early start can help you bag a great tent pitch at the festival, but it can also speed up your charging experience for the quietest times. The charge are before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. Reading Festival secured fourth spot as it offers on-site charging, unlike its sister festival in Leeds, but only 139 points in the surrounding Berkshire area. And it narrowly pipped Latitude, which is rounded off top five of these festival goers, have 10 fewer charging stations compared to Reading. Although the Suffolk Festival is the last in the list to provide charging on the festival grounds, while Merrymakers dance away night away. London's All Point East is the sixth best, with a total of 366 chargers in the 50-mile radius of Victoria Park, but they're lacking availability to nearby super hubs. While this year's Radio 1's Big Weekend, which was held in Luton, is seventh with only 72 places to power up an EV, it benefits from close links to the M1 and rapid chargers in the vicinity. And legendary dance event Creamfield is ninth, with the facilities to top up quickly in the Road Chef in Chester on the festival's doorstep, among the other 125 in the Tweshire area.
16 new displays will open at an Oxford museum this summer as part of a major overhaul at the site. The additions are part of the latest phase of the Oxford University Museum of Natural History's overhaul of its centre court. Life as we know it is set to offer visitors an aesthetic take on some of the most important ideas about how the natural world works, showcasing hundreds of specimens, taxidermy and models, and glass sculptures. The latest displays will complete three new thematic zones within the central court: biodiversity, evolution, and ecosystems. A series of stylized dioramas present ecosystems from six different environments. Each one highlights a vital process of interaction between organisms and their habitats. The exhibits will contain new ethically acquired taxidermy, which includes a mother and infant Hamadryas baboon, a sleeping koala, and a raccoon. Since the museum's inception in 1860, it has combined art and science in its nature-orientated displays. This philosophy is honoured with the introduction of four delicate glass artworks, three of which have been prepared by UK artist Luke Jerram, and the fourth commissioned from glass artist Pratibha Mistry. Three of these sculptures feature in a display on the influence of viruses on the development of life. These exhibits are complemented by digital interpretations supplementing the natural history specimens, allowing visitors to delve deeper into the ideas being explored. In one display, animated 3D models are shown alongside skeletal material to reveal similarities between the forelimb bones of a wide range of mammals, reptiles and birds, all of which share an evolutionary origin. Museum director Professor Paul Smith said, "Since the Life as We Know It project began, the museum visitors numbers are running at 10% above the highest levels recorded in its 160-year history. With further promotion through a city centre bus route campaign,
We hope even more new visitors will become excited about the natural world through these beautiful new displays. Phase 3 of Life as We Know It has been supported by funding from FCC Communities Foundation and the DCMS Wolfson Museums and Galleries Improvement Fund. Funding is currently being sought for the fourth and final phase of the renewal of the main court displays. The Museum of Natural History is open daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and admission is free. It holds the university's collections of entomological, geological and zoological specimens, having been founded as the Centre for Scientific Study at the university.
A business in Kidlington is set to host a 500-mile virtual cycle relay to raise money for a homelessness charity. From July 15th to the 18th, Intertronics, an adhesive supplier, will run Wheeling to Wiedersbaden. The event will see participants pedalling on stationary bikes for 4 days to cover the distance from Kidlington to Wiesbaden in Germany, where its supplier Dymax Europe is headquartered. Intertronics team members, suppliers, customers and friends are invited to take part. The aim is to raise £5,000 for MIUS Oxford and support homeless people. The charity provides support to 28 former homeless people by offering them homes and work opportunities within social enterprises. The fundraising target could provide almost 4 months of housing for one person or pay for 385 hours of sessions with a support worker or 200 counselling sessions. Ben Watson, Chief Commercial Officer at Intertronics, said, "While it's certainly going to be an endurance challenge, the event is designed to allow our entire team and wider network to participate in a way that they feel comfortable with. We might see some people having a short cycle on their lunch break, and I expect our more competitive team members will try to rack up more miles than anyone else."
Now that summer has eventually arrived, I would like to read you a sonnet written in 1841 by John Clare. He was an English poet who wrote extensively about the English countryside and the impact of encroaching industrialisation on rural life. He is considered one of the most important Romantic era poets, often noted for his precise observations of the natural world and the changing landscape of his native Northamptonshire. Sonnet. I love to see the summer beaming forth, and white wool rock clouds sailing to the north. I love to see the wild flowers come again, and mare blobs stain with gold the meadow drain, and water lilies whiten on the flood. Where reed clumps rustle like a wind-shook wood, where from her hiding place the moorhen pushes and seeks her flag nest floating in bulrushes. I like the willow leaning halfway o'er the clean, deep lake to stand upon its shore. I love the hay grass when the flower head swings to summer winds and insects' happy wings that sport about the meadow the bright day and see bright beetles in the clear lake play.
Multiple crews of firefighters in Oxfordshire have tackled a major fire after a bonfire spread to a hayfield. The incident occurred on Saturday, June 29th, as crews and vehicles from three of the county's fire stations attended the Brisenon area. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service believe that a blaze was caused after a bonfire which was held nearby spread to the field. Photographs posted on social media by the service show the level of damage dealt to the field, with crops blackened by the flames. A spokesperson for Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Services said crews from Whitney Fire Station and Rewley Road Fire Station, supported by a 4x4 from Abingdon Fire Station, have been in the Brisenon area today tackling a field fire. The cause is believed to be from a nearby bonfire that spread to the field with hay.
Roadside grass verges across Oxford will continue to be cut throughout July as part of the Council's ongoing grass cutting schedule. The schedule began on June the 5th, but exceptional growing conditions have meant mowing is taking much longer than usual. The council is currently carrying out its first scheduled cut as part of its two-cut programme for roadside verges in Oxford. The purpose of this first cut is to prevent grass from posing an obstruction or hazard to pavements, roads or cycleways or buildings. Mowing is also taking place across council housing areas in numerous places such as Blackbird Lees, Cutslow and Rose Hill. Oxford Direct Services, ODS, has mown roughly 45% of the grass verges throughout the city, with its focus so far on Blackbird Lees, Marston, Churchill, Northfield Brook and Temple Cowley. The council said all areas will be covered in the next month. Due to the warm and wet spring weather, grass has grown much higher than usual, causing additional resourcing challenges for ODS as it's more difficult to cut. Wet conditions meant the ground was waterlogged, thereby delaying scheduled mowing in March and early April in some parks and housing areas. To tackle these challenges, ODS plans to increase resources to undertake grass verge cutting. It is anticipated that this first grass cutting programme will conclude by the end of July. Subsequently, regular scheduled mowing will be conducted in parks and estates, with council housing areas being cut every 2 weeks. ODS is continuing to maintain and mow grass verges near junctions.
A care home near Oxford has enjoyed a week of sports activities, walks and a cake sale and a badminton tournament for charity. Staff and residents at Oxford Beaumont in Boars Hill came together to support Barchester's Charitable Foundation. The foundation, set up in 2000, helps older people and those living with disabilities or mental health problems connect with their communities. The care home hosted a badminton tournament, raffle and barbecue, raising more than £200 with additional online donations. Last year, the foundation received donations totalling £225,000, helping 160 small groups and charities and 87 individuals. Donations can be made online via the foundation's website. General Manager at Oxford Beaumont, Shardew Paul, said, "We had the most wonderful day. It was lovely to see everyone come together and to take part and raise such a brilliant amount of money for Barchester's Charitable Foundation. It's a great charity that helps many people in need, particularly lonely old people, which is, of course, very close to our hearts. Plus, it's good for our own well-being to move as much as we can. We want to say a massive thank you to everyone involved. We really had so much fun and we helped raise vital funds into the bargain. Oxford Beaumont is run by Barchester Healthcare, one of the largest care providers in the UK, and provides nursing, residential and respite care."
More than 30 countries have been represented at a food festival in Didcot. The event, held at the Meadows Care Home on June the 28th, attracted residents, their families, community members and the Mayor of Didcot, Councillor Andrew Jones. The event began with refreshments and a selection of cakes from Wales, Romania, Poland and other countries. Later, the party moved into the garden for a food festival with food including matumbu from Zimbabwe and Nigeria, chicken korma and chili chicken from India, hang kong le from Thailand, goat stew from the Philippines and chakalaka from South Africa. The event was suggested when the team discovered that employees and residents from the care home come from more than 30 countries and cultures. Members of the home's workforce have lived in countries including Wales, Poland, Nigeria, Thailand and the Philippines. Many residents too have travelled extensively or were born in countries such as Jamaica, Ghana and America. Home manager Tobias Matazonde, who is from Zimbabwe, said, "Wow, what a day! Everyone, especially our activities coordinator Megan Humphreys, went above and beyond to put on a fantastic cultural feast and activity day. I'm so happy we've taken the time to celebrate our cultures with residents, their families and visitors from the local community. We will definitely be making this an annual event."
A child was hit by a car at a supermarket car park in Kidlington. The incident occurred at the Sainsbury's car park on Oxford Road in Kidlington at around 4 p.m. on Thursday, June the 27th. A child was hit by a Mazda 2 and was left injured but did not require hospital treatment. Thamesbury Police are investigating the incident and appealed to the public for more information on Friday, June 28th. A spokesperson for the police force said, "We are appealing for witnesses following the collision. Anyone with information can call the police on 101, quoting 432-403-03720.
At around 1 p.m. on Monday the 1st of July, a plane crashed in a field close to Woodstock Road in Begbroke, shortly after taking off from London Oxford Airport. It sparked a large response from the emergency services as ambulances and the fire service were spotted attending the incident. The airport revealed on Tuesday that the emergency landing was due to an engine malfunction on board. A spokesperson for London Oxford Airport said, "Yesterday afternoon, a light single-engine training aircraft made an emergency landing in an agricultural field after experiencing an engine malfunction shortly after departure from Oxford Airport. There were no injuries to anyone resulting. Both occupants safely evacuated the aircraft and there was no damage to the aircraft involved. The aircraft is being recovered to the airport by road, where it will be carefully inspected by technicians before further flights." A spokesperson for the Air Accident Investigation Branch said, "AAIB is aware of a serious incident involving a light aircraft at Oxford Airport which occurred on Monday. We have made initial inquiries and will be conducting an investigation." Photographs show the plane in the field, and Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Services confirmed shortly afterwards that two people were on board. A spokesperson for the service said, "We were called on Monday the 1st of July at 12:58 to a field next to the A44 Woodstock East Road. Fire engines were sent from Kidlington, Ensham and Rewley Road fire stations, supported by the Airport Fire and Rescue Service."
An air ambulance and paramedics descended on a village just outside Oxford after an incident. The incident occurred at around 8:40 p.m. on Saturday evening, June the 29th, as a yellow air ambulance landed in the Lynx playing field in Kennington. Paramedics were spotted heading in the direction of the Lynx Road and Lydiard's Close before an air ambulance left the scene around 20 minutes later. Photographer Oliver Sjoberg was an eyewitness to the incident and spoke to the Oxford Mail after grabbing photographs of the ambulance in flight. "The air ambulance avoided hitting children as it came down before it shut off its engines," he said. "An ambulance SUV arrived and collected two paramedics as they jumped out with large bags, and then they quickly sped off towards Lynx Road and Lydiard Close. Roughly 20 minutes later, the skilled pilot received word to take off and return to John Radcliffe Hospital without the two paramedics, nor did any patients. The nature of the incident in Kennington is not yet known, with officials and emergency services yet to comment.
Oxford Bus Company began running a new 280 service, a replacement for Arriva's withdrawn route, on the 1st of July. This new service operates between Oxford and Thame via Headington and Wheatley, up to every 30 minutes from Monday to Saturday. The company also revised the 400 service timetable due to the planned closure of Brookes University's Wheatley campus. Ensuring connectivity, the coordinated 280 and 400 services will result in a 15-minute frequency in Wheatley on weekdays. On July the 2nd, Oxford Bus Company team members attended Thame Market to handle inquiries about the new services. Luke Marion, Oxford Bus Company Managing Director, said, "The 280 service is an exciting expansion of our network and connects Oxford and Thame, which is a key transport corridor. Combined with our revised 400 service, we are ensuring we maintain a strong network for Wheatley and improving the park and ride connectivity for the surrounding areas. We understand a lot of people have been concerned following the sad news of Arriva's local depot closures, and I hope this news will reassure people of our commitment to maintain as many services as we can."
An Oxford man who is encouraging people to consider a career in logistics has told the story of how he turned his second job into his career. Tom Dedman, 28, first trained as a sports therapist and began his career working part-time with professional football team Stevenage Town. Today he serves as ambassador for general logistics and a campaign helping raise awareness about careers in logistics. It's an industry-led, government-backed initiative to increase industry awareness and find the next generation of logistics industry talent. Looking for an extra income, he took on a second role as a warehouse operative at logistics firm GXO. After 1 year in the position, he recognised the career prospects offered by the sector and enrolled in the GXO graduate scheme. Through this, he gained experience across several aspects of logistics, from procurement to operational management, and achieved certifications. When asked about advice for individuals considering a career change, he said, "Don't be afraid to step outside your comfort zone. The logistics industry offers a wealth of opportunities for personal and professional development, regardless of your background or skill set. I wasn't aware of the many roles that were available in the sector, and I really encourage anybody who is looking for a career that offers high salaries, training and progression, and a strong work-life balance to seriously consider the logistics sector. 9 in 10 people have never considered logistics as a potential profession. The ongoing aim of Generation Logistics is to transform this mindset and reach more potential candidates." Bethany Windsor, Programme Director at Generation Logistics, said, "As Tom continues to excel in his role, he serves as a role model for others considering career transitions. His story highlights the importance of embracing change and seizing opportunities for growth, no matter what the journey, background or skill set may be. The logistics sector offers such a huge range of opportunities, such as customer support, inventory management, engineering, digital tech, the list goes on. Each role carries a diverse set of responsibilities and offers a career path that supports different skills and interests. This diversity makes logistics an ideal option for those seeking fulfillment in an evolving profession. Those who are working in education who want to shine a light on the opportunities within logistics to pupils are encouraged by the campaign to visit its education hub, offering a dedicated downloadable resource library of Key Stage 3 to Key Stage 5 curriculum relevant material for teachers and career advisors. The hub provides lesson plans and student ready tools for educators focused on the Generation Logistics Careers Booklet."
Abingdon and Whitney College will launch new courses in engineering, computing and construction management this September. The college is set to roll out several higher technical qualifications, HTQs, which will afford students and apprentices the chance to gain industry-relevant skills and knowledge and aim to put them at the forefront of their respective careers. The courses can be taken either as a standalone qualification or as part of a comprehensive higher apprenticeship course. The HTQ quality mark, given to a select number of updated and revamped traditional Higher National Certificate, HNC, courses, brings to these courses the advantage of the respected HNC qualification. The college says they have designed these HTQs in tandem with leading industry experts to meet the evolving demands of the job market and to reflect the latest industry practices. The new HTQs and higher apprenticeships offer key learning avenues such as mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, and mechatronics under engineering. Under computing, students can specialise in cybersecurity, software development, and network engineering. The construction management course focuses on site supervision skills and construction operations. The college has been graded as outstanding by Ofsted for its apprenticeship programmes. Wednesday, July the 17th, will see the college host an event for prospective students and employers to discuss and understand the benefits of these courses offer. Students will be able to network with industry leaders and find out more about how these qualifications could benefit them in the future. Principal Jackie Canton said, We are excited to offer these dynamic HTQs and higher apprenticeship programmes, which are tailored to meet the needs of modern industries. By combining theoretical knowledge with practical skills, our students and apprentices will be well equipped to excel in their careers and contribute to the economic development of Oxfordshire and beyond. The introduction of these HTQ courses points to the strategic approach of Abingdon and Whitney College towards innovation and industry engagement. Courses are tailored to bridge the skills gap and improve employability, ensuring their graduates are ready to handle the trials of the future workplace.
A man has been charged after armed police and a helicopter were called to reports of a person with a machete making threats in an Oxfordshire village. The reports were received by police at around 6:15 p.m. at the junction of Wellington Road and Farringdon Road in Southmoor on Wednesday, June 26th. Shane Loveridge, aged 30, of McLean Drive, Southmoor, has been charged with one count of affray and possession of a knife, blade or sharp-pointed article in a public place on Friday, June 28th. He appeared at Oxford Magistrates Court on the same day and was further remanded for his next hearing at the same court on August the 19th. Thames Valley Police said the force recovered a machete from the scene. Fiona Pocock, who lives in Kingston Bagpuys, next to Southmoor, said her initial reaction to the police presence in the area was somewhat fearful. I decided to lock my doors when I heard the police sounds, even though my front door was newly painted and I really have preferred it to dry more, she said. A Kingston Bagpuys with Southmoor Parish Councillor, who asked to remain anonymous, also said the incident has raised concern. She added, not all parish councillors were aware of the incident during a meeting on the night it happened.
A new indoor climbing centre is bringing the latest fitness craze of bouldering to East Oxford. Gallery Bouldering is based in The Gallery, the former Blackwell's Journal repository in Marston Street, which was converted from office space over 18 months. Bouldering is a type of climbing that is rapidly growing in popularity, which involves scaling low walls, called problems or blocks, without ropes or harnesses. As well as benefiting strength and fitness, it is very accessible for beginners. It became an Olympic sport at Tokyo in 2020, and the climbing finals at this summer's Paris Olympics will be shown live on Gallery Bouldering's big screen in August. Gallery Bouldering was founded by a team of three, including two long-time Oxford residents, Aaron Buchanan and Jamie Wakeham. Aaron studied engineering and started climbing during his DPhil studies. A key source of inspiration was Fontainebleau, just south of Paris, which is his favourite climbing destination. Jamie has been rock climbing much longer, almost 30 years, and in that time has climbed all over the world, including in the Alps and the Himalaya. He has recorded new routes in Cornwall, Skye, Morocco and Norway and contributed to many guidebooks. He's currently writing a guidebook for climbing in the UK. He's been a qualified climbing instructor for 16 years, alongside a career teaching maths and physics. Mr. Wakeham, who runs the centre, said, "Climbing in general, but bouldering in particular, is a fascinating sport. It's often likened to vertical chess. It engages our urge to investigate and solve problems, but at the same time, it's very physical. You don't need terribly strong arms, and if you're pulling too hard, you've probably missed a trick." GB squad members have been spotted at the centre, where experts, including international professionals, reset the bouldering problems nearly every week. Gallery Bouldering also has a real rock wall, auto belays, which take up slack as you climb, two digital system boards, and a well-rounded gym with a very experienced staff. A free induction, extended inductions, and more in-depth coaching are all on offer, but everyone must register on the website before visiting. Children are welcome, but given the serious nature of the sport, they must be fully supervised by an adult who has completed the training and assessment also offered by the centre. If you are already into climbing and know the ropes, once you have demonstrated your knowledge to staff, you can get straight on the wall. And when you've scaled the wall, Jericho Coffee Traders are serving coffee, beer and pizzas on a sunlit mezzanine at the sociable, light and spacious venue.
A major road will undergo a series of closures for essential repairs. National highways will carry out repair work including replacement of road expansion joints, installation of new curbs and resurfacing on Oxford Road in Abingdon. So work can be carried out safely, there will be a two-way traffic lights as well as a closure on the bridge over Oxford Road over the A34 on 4 weekends. There will be two-way traffic lights from Friday for 7 nights, 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. There will be full weekend closures on July 12th to the 15th and July 19th to the 22nd. The closures will be from 9 p.m. on Friday until 6 a.m. on Monday. There will be a contingency weekend closure if required on August 2nd to August the 5th from 9 p.m. on Friday until 6 a.m. on Monday. Oxford Road will be closed between Dunmore Road and Sugworth Lane. The northbound A34 entry slip road at Abingdon will be closed during the weekend closures. The southbound A34 exit slip road will be open, but traffic will only turn left to Abingdon. There will be a shuttle bus service for pedestrians and cyclists during the weekend closures.
Oxford City Council will celebrate the pedestrian-friendly changes made to Market Street by hosting a day of free activities later this month. The celebratory event will take place on July the 25th from midday and will also mark the launch of an 18-month trial of the pedestrian-friendly updates, which were completed in late spring. Residents can expect a welcome from Oxford Lord Mayor Councillor Mike Rowley, followed by an afternoon of family-friendly activities and live music in the evening. From midday to 3 p.m, visitors can enjoy 2 35-minute performances by Whatnot Theatre, Dragon Arts and Crafts with the Story Museum, a virtual trip to space with the Space Store, Arts and Crafts with the Museum of Oxford, and balloon modelling and stilt walking. From 5 p.m. to 8 p.m, residents can unwind with jazz duo Fifi LeMaire, regulars at Upstairs at Ronnie Scott's. Tom Bridgman, Executive Director of Development, said, "The Market Street Party will be a fantastic opportunity to show off what is possible in the new pedestrian-friendly street. The council has planned an exciting programme of events for the day to keep everyone entertained."
Burglars armed with a taser and a hammer fled on motorbikes after assaulting a man and injuring a woman. Two intruders broke into a property in Benmead Road in Kidlington at around 11 a.m. Friday, June 28th. They assaulted and threatened a man in his 30s and a woman in her 60s. The female victim suffered minor injuries but did not require hospital treatment. The burglars stole 3 watches worth a total of £20,000. Both men were wearing motorcycle helmets and dark clothing, but one was described as white and the other as mixed race. One of them was carrying a dark-coloured rucksack. The stolen watches were a Choppard Classic Racing Superfast with the Watford FC badge and April 2015 engraved on it, a Hublot Classic Fusion Original Black Magic 33mm and a Rolex Oyster Perpetual 34mm black. Investigating Officer Detective Inspector Kate May said, "I understand this may be concerning for the community, but there is nothing to suggest there is any wider threat to the public. If you have any CCTV footage or any dashcam footage, if you're in the area around the time, I'd also ask that you check any recordings in case it has captured something that could assist our investigation."
This month is Plastic Free July, and Oxford householders are being reminded of the ways they can reduce their plastic waste. Plastic Free July started in Australia in 2011 and has grown into a worldwide initiative. The campaign is encouraging millions of people to avoid single-use plastics and find sustainable alternatives where possible. Mish Tullar, Head of Corporate Strategy at Oxford City Council, said, "Plastic Free July is a great time to reflect on one's own plastic use and how we can reduce the amount we use. There are many different initiatives and organisations across Oxford that residents can get involved in. Why not give it a go and try using only refill stations to fill up your water bottle this July, or exploring your local refill shop?" Oxford City Council has installed numerous refill locations across the city, especially in parks such as Florence Park, Bury Knoll and Cutslow Park. Providing free water refills can help tackle single-use plastic waste by allowing people to keep reusing their drinking bottles or just to grab a drink at the fountain without needing to buy a container. Clean, safe drinking water is also the healthiest way to stay hydrated, with no hidden sugars or additives. The water fountains in parks are also part of the wider Refill Network, a scheme which is trying to promote places where people can access free tap water in cafes, bars, pubs, restaurants, community and leisure centres. The initiative is trying to reduce the number of plastic water bottles bought in the UK each year. Oxford residents can also reduce their plastic by taking their own containers and jars to refill shops such as Ox Unboxed in Oxford's Covered Market, Flo's Refill Shop, Headington Fair Trade, Oxfam Superstore, Wild Honey, Waitrose on Botley Road, and East Oxford Farmers Market. Customers are encouraged to bring their own containers, reducing the need for single-use plastic packaging, and can fill up a range of items including shampoo, washing up liquid, rice, pasta, nuts, chocolate, olive oil, and more. Shopping at these refill stations can not only cut down on plastic, but also helps to support local businesses. A final way to tackle plastic pollution is by taking part in litter picking. Organisations like OxClean organise litter picking activities that target areas plagued by plastic waste. These events help to raise awareness about plastic pollution.
Jeremy Clarkson has taken a swipe at James May after rumours of a professional split were confirmed. The duo presented BBC's Top Gear alongside Richard Hammond between 2003 and 15, before reuniting for Prime Video's The Grand Tour. Despite enjoying successes together, the trio have gone their separate ways professionally, with Clarkson finding further global success with Prime Video's documentary Clarkson's Farm. Clarkson mentioned May in a post on social media platform X this week, though, making a wry joke about his fellow presenter in response to a fan. "Apropos of not much, I just saw a hobby hawk," said the 64-year-old on Thursday. "Thought it was just called a hobby," asked a fan. Clarkson responded, "I fear that if I'd said I'd seen a hobby, people might have thought I'd been in James May's shed." May recently revealed he believes Clarkson, Hammond and himself are unlikely to work together again. Speaking to Unilad, he said, "I think people would only realise really like us doing cars, despite what some people say. Oh, I think you should go off and do cooking, or you should go all on to do podcast about nothing. But I don't think so. I think we should let it lie what we did."
Staff at a village pub are preparing for their first beer festival in 6 years. Staff and regulars at the Seven Stars in Marsh Balden near Oxford have celebrated their first year since reopening. And from July the 12th to July the 14th, they will be hosting a beer festival featuring local ales, including those brewed by Abingdon's Loose Cannon Brewery. Namit Julka, who runs the pub with Sinit Basode, said, "We're looking forward to the beer festival later this month. The locals tell us there hasn't been a beer festival here for about 6 years, so they're very excited about it. All the local brewers will be providing their beers and ciders. The regular pub menu will be available, and there'll be live music too." It's over a decade since families from Marsh Balden and surrounding villages formed the Baldens and Newnham Courtney Society, BNCS, enabling them to buy shares in the 350-year-old Seven Stars and own it themselves. Mr. Julka said earlier, "It has been a very good first year. It's been very busy. The pub has a very good reputation for food. On Sunday we do roasts with beef, pork or chicken supreme. There are also vegan nut roasts. Every second Thursday there's a Thai curry night from 5 p.m. to 9:30. The intention was always to give the local community their village pub back, so it could be used regularly and for different events. We have a quiz night every other Wednesday. The pub is a free house and serves local ales and Butcombe beers. The barn continues to be a popular feature. It can accommodate up to 36 seated guests or 60 standing, with a bar area, main restaurant and patio stretch tent available too. In 2013, cheers erupted when the pub was officially opened by the previous owner, London investment company Winton Capital Management founder David Harding, who had sold it to residents. More than 70 villagers clubbed together in 2012 to raise more than £110,000, and they formed a company to buy the pub and refurbish it.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Ox Talk edition. Please ring 07 496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.